I'm not ready.
Blah, 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 blah.
Okay.
Here we are.
And yeah, we're here. Welcome, everybody. It's 7 p.m. Eastern Time. That's U.S. Eastern Time. Oh, my clock just changed. Okay, July 15th. If it is not July 15th right now, well, you're listening to an archive show on iTunes or on the Internet. We have Ron with us. Ron, live
from
Florida Estates Winery. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks. Bus people, even in all this rain.
Yeah, that surprised me. When the buses showed up, I thought, I wasn't prepared for this because it was raining. It's been raining, and we've had some severe weather to the southeast of us in Hillsborough County. We're in Pasco County. Are you in Pasco County?
I'm in Pasco.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
So we're kind of sharing the same storm cell, I guess. And so I'm watching the weather radar in one screen and just kind of, you know, making sure we don't get hit by anything. And let's see. Ron is with the Florida Estates Winery located in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 25241 State Road 52. 25241 State Road 52. Put your GPSs on and plug that address into it, Land O'Lakes, Florida. And if you'd like to call them direct, it's area code 813-996-2113. 813-996-2113. Email, you know, I think the intro does all that, but let me do it.
Yeah.
Email is corp@floon.com. Corp is C-O-R-P at the ad sign, F-L-E-W-N.com, F-L-E-W-N.com. And they have a wonderful website for all the information on the winery and the happenings, events, and what they have to offer if you're interested in groups, having groups go to the winery, special events. Check out the website at www.floridaestateswines.com, floridaestateswines.com. The show is 1 hour. Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. Area code 646-727-3235. Call us during this hour until 8 o'clock Eastern Time. I got to take another sip of I am sipping. So far, my absolute favorite wine of all time is the Plantation Spice.
Thank you.
And I also have the port, but I didn't know if I should mix the two, so I'm starting with the Plantation Spice.
That's good.
If I start mixing them, next thing you know, it'll be 9 o'clock, and I'm still talking, and nobody's here.
Yeah, well, it cut us off anyway. Yeah. Thousand Mics is still here, so.
Yeah, Thousand Mics will just keep going, and you know we'll be rambling by that time. But so anyway, check it out. And the winery is open every day from 11 a.m. until 6 p.m. 11 a.m. until 6 p.m. Excellent quality, world-class wines, and I'd love to go over there and just do the tasting, and you know, then I mark it down on the little menu thing and say, okay, that's another one I need to buy. So excellent. And Ron, it's great to have you here, and it's a great presentation when you do the tastings. And you also have a wine class coming up this Saturday.
This Saturday.
Is
right.
July 17th. And you definitely want to check it out if you're interested in wines and, you know, you're just curious about it. There's plenty of topics are covered, a brief history of the wines, varietals of the grapes, diseases, grape diseases, the glass styles and uses, cork history, evolution and uses, oak aging, and, of course, wine tasting and the rating of wines is discussed, and sampling of wines and discussion about them located at the Florida Estates Winery Tasting Room on State Road 52. It's 4 miles west of Interstate 75 in Land O'Lakes on State Road 52. So definitely check it out at Florida Estates Winery this weekend, this Saturday at, you know, I didn't get the times on there. Are the times in the message? In the mail?
Yeah, sure. two till five.
There you go. Okay, I got to write that one. I don't see, maybe it's not in here. Okay, I'm looking at the email. And
yeah.
Okay, that's cool. So tonight we are. You have a couple of things you want to bring up, and we're going to discuss Central Valley. We're still on California. California is one of those small states that have, I guess they produce some wines.
They produce a little bit.
A little. And they're so-so wines.
Yeah, some of them are so-so more than others.
Yeah. And so we'll continue with Central Valley. And Ron, it's all yours. I think you have a couple of things you want to say first, but
one of the first things I do want to cover, which, you know, if anybody's listening to this that is not living in Florida, and I think we do get listeners throughout the country, if not throughout the world, come to Florida. I know there's an oil spill out in the Gulf, and it's affecting a lot of places. but it doesn't affect us. It's got a few of the beaches and stuff like that, and they're cleaning it up. You don't have to stay away from Florida. We want you to visit us. So, you know, jump in your cars, jump on your plane, jump on your trains, grab your boats, whatever.
Yep. I'm sorry, that was quick.
No, the bus people like that. Whatever, jump in your bus, come visit us in Florida. We want to see you visit us in Florida because we have a lot to offer. It's not just because there's a little bit of oil on the beaches. There's lots of stuff down here. So if you're listening to this from any other place besides Florida, we're not closed down. The oil's not stopping us. We're still full speed ahead down here. So I wanted to cover that quickly, just to cut the perception that the oil is affecting all of us badly is enough to, I think, affect people. So, I hear a
microwave or something going on.
I don't know what it is. Well, we are baffled here about this sound that's coming out of the.
Is that on my end or your end?
My end. I don't know what it is. Yeah. One of the things, Mike says, I have a couple of things I want to cover. One of the things I do want to cover, we have been talking about organic. We've been talking about organic wines off and on and different things. Well, for the last, 2 years, I think we've been doing this.
Yep.
And my engineers are afraid there might be a bomb that's making that noise. But we've been talking about organic for the last couple of years in different areas that we've been in and the concept of organic and what it does. And we've also covered biodynamic wine growing and areas of that. 3 or 4 weeks ago, I think it was, we were talking about Lake County and about a winery there that is all biodynamic and how they work and operate and all. This week or so ago, I received at the winery a letter from OIA. It's OIA Certification North America. It's OIA North America. It's out of Gainesville, Florida. And what OIA is the organic organization of the United States. And I wanted to cover this a little bit more and tell you a little bit about it. In fact, let me go through this letter quickly here. It says, I'm sending information about the organic certification. OIA North America is a USDA-accredited certifying agent based in North Central Florida. Organic agriculture is the fastest-growing market for food and for crops and processed food. The Organic Trade Association has reported that the annual growth in organic foods in the United States has averaged more than 20% a year for the past 10 years, at a time when most other categories are showing little or no growth. In 2008, the organic market was estimated to be valued at $23.6 billion in the United States alone. That's with a B, billion dollars. So as we at OIA North America put together some resources for farmers, processors, handlers interested in learning more about this market. Includes, please find the following. It's an IOA brochure I'll read you about, and then the fee schedules. We hope that you find the enclosed information useful. Additional resources about organic practices can be found at the ATTRA website. That's at attra.org, if anyone out there likes to check that out. It's especially useful as their booklet on how to develop organic farming, and that can be found at the website also under attar.org, organic HTML, and I think they misspelled it. It probably should be RA. And it goes on, please contact us. Thank you for taking your time and all that. And then I've got a couple of brochures here. And I want to go tell you about Organic North America, what is involved in this. This first brochure, Simple Steps to Organic Certification. These are the steps to be certified organic. Step one, request certification packet. And it says the first step is request for a free certification packet. And they will provide us with all the information, everything you need for that. Step two, read regulations and complete the compliance plan. It's a multi-page compliance plan and questionnaire and ask a number of questions about how you plan to comply with the regulations. If you have any questions, they have an agency, the agency can help you go through it. It says submit the compliance plan. You can either mail it or go on the internet. There is a place to do it there. Step number four, OIA reviews the compliance plan to determine if the compliance plan, if implemented as described, would comply with the regulations. So you have to lay out a plan, and they have to check and be sure that it is a proper way to be organic. If not, the applicant is contacted to make appropriate corrections. Then, if the plan leads to compliance, if followed, OIA North America proceeds to assign an inspector. Step five, an on-site inspection. OIA North America conducts an on-site inspection at a mutually agreed upon time to verify the compliance plan submitted has been effectively implemented at the operation. Post-inspection, the inspector submits a written report of the finding to the OIA North America. Step six, OIA North America conducts final compliance review or the certification process. OIA North America reviews the compliance plan, the inspector's report, and any additional information and documentation collected during the process and makes a final determination. If so, OIA issues a USDA NOP organic certificate. If not, the operation is contacted to make appropriate corrections where corrections are possible. And step seven, ongoing compliance and renewal. After certification is granted, the operation must maintain compliance with the approved compliance plan, notifying OIA, and receive approval for changes, and update the compliance plan annually and submit to annual on-site inspections. This is what is required to get organic certification in the United States. It says OIA North America is accredited by the USDA, and that's U.S. Drug Department, National Organic Program to provide organic certification. Additionally, through relationships with the OIA families of companies, OIA North America can also provide access to European Union organic certification, IFOAM organic certification, JAS, or Japanese organic certification, and access to organic markets worldwide. Wow. So they are capable of contacting and getting it all over the world, and those are the steps. Now, the fees, how much does it cost? You know, I mean, you just don't go organic and say, oh, goody, I'm certified organic, here it is. And excuse me, I need to take a quick sip of wine. Mm-hmm. I have a Carmenere I'm enjoying tonight.
Oh, okay.
There is a different fee schedule for each of the primary operations, farms and growers, processors and handlers, and livestock operations. Each fee schedule has three fee components, a base fee, a scalable fee, and an inspections fee. The total cost of certification is the sum of all three fee components. For a detailed fee estimate of your operation, contact the office. But they do give a basis. Farm or grower fees, which is basically wineries and vineyards and stuff like this. The base fee is $1,000, which includes a single location with up to 20 acres. Larger operations or those with more than one location also pay the scalable fee as noted below. So if you have less than 20 acres, 20 or less, it's $1,000 at one location. Operations with more than 20 acres or more than one location pay an additional fee of $20 per acre above the initial 200 or above the initial 20 acres and an additional $200 per additional location. So if you have three locations, this one costs your initial cost $1,000 plus $200 for each additional, so another $400 plus for each of the other locations, $20 per acre, depending on how many acres you have. So if you have 10 acres of each, that's going to be $2,000 on top of for each of those. So you're looking at close to $6,000. Plus, inspection fees are $350 per location, plus actual travel expenses. So if you have three locations, 10 acres in each location, you're looking at $6,500 just to be certified as a grower of grapes and as a farm grower. If you only have one location, it's $1,000 plus a $350 fee. If you have more acreage, it starts running more monies per acre. It just, you know, it's all broken down. Processor and handler fees are laid out, as is livestock operation fees. Livestock's just about the same as the grower's fees. Processor and handler fees are quite a bit more, $2,000, and it includes products that are certified and stuff, and they go into a completely different type of breakdown on that, which doesn't affect wineries at all. Actually, the farm grower fees is the one that we worry about. So that is how it is broken down, and that's how the fees are. So I got this, and I thought that was really interesting. And like I said, we have talked about organic in the past. We've talked about biodynamics in the past and about all sorts of different organic type things. And this organization, OIA of North America, and, you know, and I have to say, I keep saying OIA, and you're out there saying, what does OIA mean? I have no idea. I looked through this entire brochure, everything I have here, and I don't know what OIA stands for. Organic, I'm sure, is the first word. But
It says on this website, it says Organic in America.
Oh, there you go. Organic in America, North America. Okay. No wonder that is confusing. You looked up the ATTRA.org?
Yes.
Oh, okay, good,
yep.
Good.
Yep, National Sustainable Agriculture Information Service, a project of the National Center for Appropriate Technology.
Wow.
I have no idea.
I have no idea.
Appropriate? Okay, I guess so.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, it says Organic in America is OIA.
So Organic in America, North America.
Yeah.
Now, that's so that's what OIA is. It doesn't say anything on the entire letter, so thank you for checking that out, Mike.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is. So that's organic. That's the organic system to get certified in this country, and what it takes to so you can say you are organic. When I was out in California a couple years ago, I was visiting a grower out there, and I asked him if he was doing anything organic, and he goes, every spring, everything's organic. He said, and then once the bugs started attacking the vineyard, he said, we spray that one no longer is organic, and the others are. And he said, and if we make it through a whole season without having to spray it, he said, we've got ourselves an organic vineyard. He said, but he said, that's rare. He says, most of the time we have to spray it because of bugs. So wanted to share that before we went into Central California. Next, we are going to talk about now is Central California, Central Valley, a big, big Central Valley. Central Valley is divided into two sections, and I want to talk about Central Valley for a while because it is so big and because it does cover so much and because it's enormous. Central Valley is usually referred to in the northern half of the Central Valley as Sacramento Valley. A lot of wineries up around that area. This goes from Redding all the way down to approximately Sacramento. That is the Central Valley is the central in the state of California, is what the actual designation of Central Valley. And everybody knows Central Valley as just that, the Central Valley of California. From Redding down to approximately Sacramento, and then they referred to the Sacramento area there. South of Sacramento is actually the east of San Francisco Bay Area. A lot of canals and marshes and rivers and stuff. Actually, that's where I learned to ski in the Sacramento Basin there, the river basin. South of the San Francisco area is the San Joaquin Valley. And that stretches from just south of the San Francisco area there, all the way down through Fresno, down to, well, actually south of Bakersfield, which is north. Oh, we're getting some heavy rains again here, which is north of Los Angeles, almost due north of Los Angeles, over the hills there. So Bakersfield is actually the southern end of the Central Valley. Now, the Central Valley runs approximately 500 miles long, or 800 kilometers for those of you who go by metric. It is a big enough area. It's roughly the same size as the state of Tennessee, enormous area. When you look at the Central Valley by itself, you don't realize how really large it is. But when you start comparing to the fact that it is as big as Tennessee, it stretches approximately 42,000 square miles, or 110,000 kilometers or square kilometers. The northern area of it and the southern area are a little bit different. Northern area receives about 20 in Northern Valley, that which again Sacramento Valley receives about 20 inches of rain annually, which is not a lot, but it's enough. You can grow stuff and all that without having to fertilize or without having to bring in water, but you still have to do quite a bit of watering. And then the southern area, the San Joaquin area, on the river from the San Joaquin area, is very dry, semi-arid desert, if you will. It's just and so most of that area is watered through the California Aqueduct system, which is an enormous system that was started in the 30s, I believe, 1934, and it stretches all through the Central Valley. That's how the Central Valley is able to grow so much crop, is because of the watering system, the aqueduct system that is throughout there. The two main rivers, the Sacramento River and the San Joaquin River, is what runs through them, a strange area, and hence the names of San Joaquin Valley and Sacramento Valley. They form the delta, which is east of San Francisco and drains into the San Francisco Bay and on out that way into the ocean. It is a very big agriculture area. The whole Central Valley is an enormous agriculture area. A lot of, bounded on the north by the Cascade Range, the Trinity Alps, and the Klamath Mountains. The Sierra Nevada Mountains are on the east. The Tehachapi, I believe it's pronounced, mountains are to the south, and the coastal range in San Francisco Bay is to the west. So it's quite a large area. Sacramento, the biggest metropolitan area within the Central Valley. Fresno, the second largest. Sacramento's got over 2 million people, and the metropolitan area of Fresno, a little over 1 million. And then there's a few other towns going from Redding, Yuba City, Merced, Visalia, Modesto, Stockton, Bakersfield, throughout the Central Valley. It is flat, a few hills, a few rolling hills, but most of the Central Valley is flat. It just stretches out as one big flat valley. Central Valley also has a lot of earthquake faults running through it, which you can, as you go through the Central Valley, you can see these faults, and you can different areas where it's affected it and different faults. But overall, pretty flat. Excuse me. Central Valley also is, because of the temperatures and all that, a lot of grapes are planted in the Central Valley, a lot of grapes. And a lot of them in the southern Central Valley, in the San Joaquin part of it, is raisin grapes. You can drive, there's two main highways that go up through the Central Valley. One of them is Interstate 5, which is a little bit, it runs all the way down into L.A., and all up and down the East Coast, Central Valley, West Coast of the United States. And then the other one is State Road 99, which branches off from Interstate 5 but before you get to Bakersfield. It connects onto Interstate 5 in the southern part, and it branches off and runs just pretty much parallel all the way through Central Valley with Interstate 5, and then connects back on to Interstate 5 up in the northern part of the state. And so two main roads that run down through the San Francisco Valley. When you're taking, say, State Road 99 through central part of California, especially in the San Joaquin Valley, there are miles and miles and miles of grapevines. You over and over again, you just keep seeing them. You're amazed by how many grapevines there are out there. And most of these are raisin grapes. An awful lot of raisin grapes are growing there. Raisin is an enormous crop. A lot of the grapes in that area are turned to raisins. Interesting how it's done. In fact, for a little interesting, while I didn't know that type of reaction, punch in a search engine on raisin grapes, and it's just fascinating. The method, and they use big warehouses where they dry them and put them together and put them in boxes and all that. But a lot of raisin grapes. But there's also a lot of big, big wineries in Central Valley. I talked to a Ben from Crabberry Altar Wines. I got a hold of Crabberry Altar Wines, and I was talking about how they have done altar wines since the late 1800s, and it's how they furnish altar wines to basically everybody in most of the western part of the United States, and it's they just, you know, a lot of stuff about the altar wines, and so I wanted to call them and see if I can get a hold of anyone there and see if they had any information about the altar wines, see if they could tell me a little bit about altar wines, what grapes they use in the altar wines, and any process or any special thing that they did as they were making the altar wines. And I got a hold of Ben, and Ben said that they do a lot of outsourcing, and he was very forthright with me about Central Valley itself, about the outsourcing. He says a lot of the wineries in the Central Valley do get grapes from other areas. He said it's from the Monterey area. A lot of wineries pulling and get grapes from Monterey area. A lot of them pulling grapes from the Sierra foothills, just from all over the state. He said most of the time you will not see a designation of Central Valley, because he said they're trying to live down the concept, the ideas that people have that the Central Valley is just so hot and you can't make a decent wine there. And so he said you will not find that. He said if they do use a designation, they will say California. And he says most of your wineries that you see that just are, most of your labels that you see that just say California wine are a lot of times from the Central Valley, because they don't have any other designation. I asked him, I said, you have AVAs in the Central Valley? And he said, yes. He said, there's a series of them around different areas. He said, just little small areas, little small places and stuff like that, little AVAs. And so I looked and found the AVAs. These are the AVAs, or American Viticulture Areas, that are included in the Central Valley of California. We got the Alta Mesa, our Mesa, rather, A-L-T-A-M-E-S-A, Alta Mesa, Borden Ranch, Capay Valley, Clarksburg, Clements Hill, Consumes River, Diablo Grande, Dunnigan Hills, Yahant, and I think that's how it's pronounced, J-A-H-A-N-T, Lodi, Madeira, Merritt Island, McIlumine River, River Junction, Salado Creek, Slough House, and Tracy Hills. Those are the AVAs for the Central Valley of California. And AVAs, I've talked about it. AVAs in the United States are American Viticulture Areas. It specifies that the geographical location has to bring out at least 85% of the grapes from that area, and must have been grown in that area. And it's typical to probably closer to an Italian Indicia Zone Grafica Tipica, which is a designation area. Most other European systems don't have as loose a standards as American AVAs. the American AVAs don't limit the type of grapes they're growing or the method or the crop yield or anything else, although most other people who have AVAs insist that theirs is very good and has been, they are following certain standards and all that to try to keep it, you know, certain crop yields and stuff to try to keep it within that designation. So AVA, I just wanted to let you know the ones that are in Central Valley. Now, Central Valley, Kaveri Winery, Kaveri Ultra Winery, Ben said that they produce Ultra wine over 100,000 cases a year that they ship around the country. That's a lot, 100,000.
I mean,
and he said that they're basically a co-op, which there is a lot of wineries in the Central Valley that are co-ops, I found. A lot of them that work with other wineries, a lot of them that are very big wineries, they don't really have vineyards on location. A lot of the wineries have vineyards that are other places, and they work with other wineries. Oh, bless you. My engineer is not feeling well, and so... So a lot of the Central Valley wineries make bulk wines or jug wine. You find this an awful lot there. The grapes can be very prolific. They make just about every type of grape you want. But again, they're trying to live down that reputation as not being good wines, not being reminds me a lot of Florida, to be honest with you, because Florida has a reputation also. How can you grow good because it's so hot? Well, you know, Central Valley is also facing that same type of problem, that same type of designation. It is so hot there, so how can you grow good wines in such heat? And they can. You can. I mean, you know, I mean, in Florida and also in the Central Valley. Kaveri Winery said that most of the time, like I said, if you have a designation that says California, it's usually from the Central Valley. The Kaveri Winery does bottling for a whole bunch of different wineries. He said they bottle close to 1 million gallons of bulk wine a year that they ship around to different wineries, and they spread out. The Florida State Winery also gets some wine from the Central Valley. The winery that we use, ASV, is in Central Valley. It's in the South Central Valley. And a lot of the wines that that they get are from the Monterey area, but they have their vineyards there. ASV is an enormously large winery. They ship wines throughout the world. I got a hold of... I've got a complete blank right now. I'm sorry. Mike out there. I had a blank. I've got a hold of Mike out there at ASV, and he said that they process and sell wines to wineries throughout the country and around the world. A company in Germany orders wine from them. They ship a bag, a great big waterbed type bag that holds 5,000 gallons. Wow. And they fill it up with wine, and they put it in a container truck, and they drive it down to the docks, and from the docks they ship it over to Germany. And then when they get to Germany, they bottle it from there. ASV also bottles wines for a lot of other wineries. They have a facility in Monterey, just technically in the Central Valley, up in Monterey, just over the hills. And they do a lot of what they call slicks there, which a lot of the wineries in the Central Valley do this. And slicks are bottles with no label. You can call them up and you say, I like 1,000 cases of a Chardonnay, an oak Chardonnay, and they will bottle it all and ship it to you, and then you can put your own labels on them. Or on one, you know, 500 cases of Cabernet, non-labeled. Or if you want, you can give them your labels and or have them do the labels and say, this is such and such a winery. We need another, 250 cases of Zinfandel, and they will do it for you. This is ASV does this continuously throughout the year, as do a lot of the wineries in the Central Valley. And Dan reaffirmed this in the fact that when I was talking to him, he said that they basically are an office, and he said it just there's so many people that work under him that are in so many different areas up and down the Central Valley.
Yeah.
That scared me.
What was that?
That was thunder.
Oh, yeah, I'm hearing something over here.
Yeah. Lightning and thunder.
Yep.
But the bulk wines coming out of Central Valley is an enormous business. Mike at ASV said that the Central Valley really provides close to 50% of the wines going out of California because of the bulk business that they do. So it's enormous, enormous type of business. I talked for a little bit to a girl in at Delicato. Delicato is a winery that has been around since 1924. They also are an enormous winery, although they do have their own line of wines. They make a white Zin, a Chardonnay, Merlot, Syrahs, and a Cabernet. And you can find these wines everywhere. I mean, they ship throughout the country. You go down to your local wine shop or even grocery store, and you can find some Delicato wines sitting on the shelf. Again, out of the Central Valley, which usually they don't give the designation that it's out of the Central Valley. Some of the wineries out of the Central Valley are ones that we've heard for years and years. And Marimont Estates, Almaden. Almaden is one that has been around for a long, long time. A lot of your jug wines, you've seen jug wines, Almaden jug wines and stuff. Almaden has gotten away from a lot of their jug, and they're now putting it in boxes. Almaden is offering a 3-liter box and a 5-liter box, which a 3-liter box breaks down to like four bottles of four regular size bottles of wine, 750 milliliter, and the 5-liter box is about 6.5 bottles of wine. So they put out a whole series of wines there. I think the most, well, Woodbridge Winery also, Robert Mondavi's venture, Woodbridge, is located in the Central Valley. Bogle, R.H. Phillips, which does Toasted Head. You see Toasted Head all over the place in grocery stores and wineries and all sorts of stuff. I think the biggest one, the ones that we are most familiar with, whenever we start talking about Central Valley wineries, and the ones that I think I once I mention the name, people will go, oh, yeah, is E&J Gallo.
Mm.
They started, and their winery is located in the Central Valley. Their main office is located in the Central Valley. E&J Gallo does a tremendous amount of wines from the Central Valley. They've done it for years. And I'm not going to go down and name them all, but E&J Gallo is the name behind Barefoot Cellars, Bartles and James, Boone's Farm, Carlo Rossi, Dancing Bowl, all the E&J brandies that you see on the shelves, Echo Domaine, Frey Brothers. These are all part of the Gallo family. There's Livingston Cellars. Louis M. Martini is now under the Gallo business. Maristu is under the Gallo. Rancho Zabeco, Red Bicyclette. I'm sure you all have seen those on the shelves. Turning Leaf, Turning Leaf Sonoma Reserve. Those are just a few of the names that I'm sure everyone's familiar with. There's literally dozens of more on the list that Gallo does. Let me do a quick count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, there's 32, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 22. There's about 55, 60 different big brands that Gallo produces. And they also, you know, import a lot of these from around the world. These are French, also from South American stuff. Gallo is one of the very largest companies for wine production in the world. And they're in the Central Valley. It's an area that they found that it's just southern Central Valley, San Joaquin section of the Central Valley. And it's they have made a fortune out of that area there and the grapes that they grow in that area. And they also get from other areas. But it's just they've continued to expand tremendously originally starting in the Central Valley. They do get grapes out of Napa and Sonoma, also Australia, New Zealand, France, Germany, Italy, Spain, Argentina, and South Africa. These are all parts of the Gallo family that started and is headquartered in the Central Valley of California. It's in such a big area that it's hard to describe one type of grape. It's hard to describe one type of soil, one type of climate. Basically hot, dry, and that's what you're going to find in the Central Valley. You've got wineries that are in the northern part that get their grapes from a little bit moisture climate, a little bit a cooler climate than you do with the nights being cooler than you're going to find in the southern part. You're going to have ones in the southern part that are warm all the time, which doesn't produce the real aromatic type. Aromatic, thank you. My engineer just helped me on that. Aromatic, couldn't get the word to come out. Aromatic wines, but you... in the northern part, you have more of that. It's a lot of the wineries, if you're not enormous, if you're not big, if you're not just so large that you overwhelm everyone, then you're going to find yourself a very small, tiny winery. As I was going through this, as I was talking to people and all that, you're either enormous or you're small. There's no medium-sized wineries there. If you're medium-sized, you've been bought out by the big ones. If you're small and just want to stay in business yourself, relatively small batches of wine, relatively small wineries, making a very limited amount of wines and some very good wines. One of them I looked at was River Grove Winery. They put out a Syrah, a Merlot, and a Port in the reds, and they also do a Pinot Grigio, Chardonnay, and a Sauvignon Blanc in their whites, and they also do a bubbly wine, too, actually a sparkling Syrahs and a couple of Blanc de Blanc, which is white on white, basically what Blanc de Blanc means. They do the standard method champagnes, in their champagne, and they won awards. They've got themselves a critical acclaim and all that, but that's it. Just a few small yields. They don't put out a lot. They don't do a lot, and they strive for that. They're located in Clarksburg, which is in the delta of the Sacramento River. Clarksburg is southeast more than anything, southeast of Sacramento in that area. And Yolo County, because of the areas, they are able to grow like I say, the Pinot Noirs and different grapes like this that you're not going to be able to grow in the southern part of the state. It's amazing how diverse the Central Valley is. It's, you know, I was I was putting together notes to talk about the Central Valley, and most areas we've talked about, I've been able to say, okay, this is the soil, and this is the land, and this is how it's going to be. And the Central Valley is such a diverse area. We can almost divide it up into three or four areas just in itself. It's amazed me. I mean, I lived in California, and I used to go to quite a few of the wineries in the Central Valley, and I never thought too much about it, never paid much attention to the diversity of the Central Valley until I started to check on it to put for this program tonight. Another winery that I found quite interesting was Mokelumne Oaks, Mokelumne, Mokelumne Oaks Winery. It is a direct sale winery. They it's a little small boutique winery, micro winery, in the Lodi Appalachian. And it's the taste room is very small, but most of the stuff is online or by mail. They're outside of Lockford in California. They do a Perignon, a Cab Shiraz blend, a Cabernet Sauvignon, and a couple of Cuvée blends, an Old Vine Zin, White Porter Merlot, just a variety of California type wines that are that are available for purchase online and through the through their website. You can get mixed case, you can get all that and look at the website. Now they have a white port and a half cases, mixed cases, all sorts of stuff on that. But again, it is an online winery, basically. And most of the stuff is done for sale online, located, and again, in the Lodi area, which is in south of the, about in the central part of it, just north of the San Joaquin Valley and the south of the Sacramento Valley, so in that area. There's some wineries that I found that were just so overwhelmingly large. I talked to some of the one person in at ASV after Mike, the first person I talked to was Meredith, and she said that the Central Valley, the concept of the wineries in the Central Valley are so diverse. Not only do they do grapes, but are do great wines, but they also do a lot of the raisins and a lot of other crops that they the big wineries are involved with. ASV, for example, does a lot of shipping overseas, a lot of shipping around the country and all that, and a lot of their own bottling. But there's also a lot of the wineries that will do a lot of different crops from the Central Valley, that wine is almost like a secondary type project, that if they're going to do everything else, include wines in with it. And I found this in some of the big wineries to be quite true. The Central Valley, and to show you how large the Central Valley is, how big it ranks, the Central Valley outranks 20 states in population. And by 2020, the Central Valley is looking at outranking 33 states in population. If the Central Valley were a state itself, it would be, out of the 50 states, it would rank number 41 in the area. It would be number 31 in population. It would be population gain. The Central Valley would rank number 9. The Central Valley would rank 17 in the number of American Indians it has in it. It would rank number 8 in the number of Asians. number 2 in Cambodians and Laotians, and number 6 in Hispanics, number 3 in Mexican origins, 26 in the population 0 to 9, households with 7 or more people, number 10, per capita household income 40, and because the unemployment rate is so high there, that's one of the reasons. The farming occupation would rank number 4, and the college enrollment, it would be number 47. So Central Valley, it's just enormous. This is, I mean, we talk about wine, but just the Central Valley itself, it's impossible just to talk about wine about Central Valley because it contains so much, it is so much, it has so much there, that wine is brought in from so many places and bottled there, shipped from there, made there, spread out from there, a lot of the Central Valley is just, let's see, I found something here I was going to mention about the Central Valley. Where is it? I lost it now. But it's just, here we go. That's Central Coast. I went Central Coast. But the Central Valley of California grows just about everything. And that includes grapes. You can find just about any type of grape you want to find in the Central Valley of California. And if you include the entire Central Valley, and it covers, 500 miles long, and it's going from Kern County in the south all the way up to just south of Redding in the north. You're going to get different climates. You're going to get different types of soils and stuff. Rich soils in the river basin valley. A lot of the Central Valley used to flood year after year after year because of the snow melts, and the rivers would overflow and flood. And because of the tremendous amount of flood that used to go on in the Central Valley, they have diverted water. They have dammed up the rivers. They have stopped a lot of the areas. Some of the areas where the grapes are growing right now, some of the big areas where they're getting tremendous crops of grapes and a lot of other stuff, is in old areas throughout the Central Valley that used to flood year after year. And so the soil is very rich and very prolific for the plants to grow there because of the flooded soil. And they've stopped that. Now they're just watering and they're irrigating. But the Central Valley of California, we're familiar with it. I say that with confidence. Everybody has had wine from the Central Valley. It's because of the diversity of it, because of wineries like Gallo, who has such a far reach in all the stuff that they do and everything. Everyone has enjoyed wine from the Central Valley, not knowing it's the Central Valley of California, just saying, oh, this is a California wine. Almaden being very big. I'm sure that just about everyone out there at one time or another had themselves a glass of an Almaden wine, and that is wine from the Central Valley of California. So, to sum it up, I can't say anything really – really bad about the Central Valley, and there's some wonderful wines coming out of there. There's absolutely gorgeous wines coming out of the Central Valley. Some of these wineries are making some wines that will rival just about anything else the state of California puts out, and they're quite proud of their wines and what they do and everything. The little boutique wineries who put out small batches have something to be very proud of. And ones we probably won't taste, we probably won't see anywhere because they are so small. If you're in California, obviously that's the time to find them. But a representation of Central Valley wines in this country and actually around the world is probably more diverse than Napa even in the fact that they are affordable, they are drinkable, and they are everywhere.
So. All right. I guess. Oh, can we, there we go.
Well, they had to run under shelves specifically.
Yes. We have a certain lightning spacing limit, I guess. If it's so many miles out, they have to take cover, and then they come back, applaud, and they go back for cover again.
Go back to cover.
So it's a quick trip outside just to do the, you know, by the microphones, and then they clap and go.
Run out and then run back, yeah.
Yeah. So we are continuing. I believe we are continuing with California next week.
We are going to continue with California next week. Let's see. Let me look and see what we're
going to do. Yeah, I was just going to say, there's other plenty of... And I was also looking at the USDA Organic Certification website, which is the OAI North America. It's OAINorth.com. And I was just looking at the certification, and they only list two different types. One is for handlers, processors, distributors, and then the other one is for growers and producers. And I'm wondering if you're... Okay, so you're a grower, and you happen to be a distributor, because in some locations you can do that. What was that? We did Alabama or something? One of those states that you can't do both.
Right. In Alabama, you can't do both.
So I'm wondering, if you are a distributor and you are a grower, you have to submit. There's different forms for each of those, and I'm assuming there's additional fees, because not only are you just growing it, but you're also, now you're distributing, and that's a whole separate thing. I'm wondering if that's an extra charge, I guess.
I would guess that's an interesting point, though. I would guess it might be.
I was looking at the forms, and you know, they're separate requirements and separate forms that you have to fill out for that. So it's kind of it can go on if you do all of the above. So,
and it could get very expensive, you know. And then you have to question the fact: is it really worth it to do that?
Yeah. I mean, what do you do? You put an extra label on your bottles that say, you know, it's certified organic. I mean, you know, does that produce a better draw or what? I mean, is it?
Can you charge an extra dollar for your wine? Yeah. I don't know.
Hmm. Interesting.
It is interesting point. I may try to get a hold of somebody who is certified organic. I wonder if I don't know if I can do that. But try to get hold of somebody who is certified organic and see what they say. See if it is worth the expense, the extra time and energy and effort to be certified organic.
Right.
Yeah. Or if it's just something that you're spinning wheels just because it's something that's in right now. I don't know. I just I'm.
Yeah. Seems like everything's going in that general direction. Everything, electronics, everything now is going organic or green. I guess we were talking about that earlier. So one of those things. I don't know. And they're charging extra for that.
and that's it. You know, it's just what it boils down to. Too, they're charging extra for it. And
a new cash avenue for them.
Yeah, and you have to charge extra if it's going to cost you that much to do it.
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely.
I mean, it pretty much does away with the options. It just, you know, if I got to spend, you know, $5,000-$6,000 to be certified organic.
Oh yeah, per year probably, right? Isn't that a yearly process? Or
yeah,
I think
it was. You know, you got to be recertified every year, and you got to be reinspected and all that. You know.
Hmm. Wow, that can add up. Okay, we are going to. I guess we're less than almost a minute here, but we're going to officially. We go. 90 seconds. We're going to officially close the show here. Thank you, Ron, as always, for your information and educating us on everything about wine and the Central
North
Valley.
North Coast next week. North Coast.
North Coast. I'll have to write that one down.
North Coast.
Okay. We'll do North Coast of California next week at 7 p.m. That's next Thursday. So do join us, and we hope you'll give us a call or send us your emails and let us know that you're listening. And you can also leave a comment on, I know, 1000 Mics has the comment section. You can always leave feedback there. You can also leave feedback on Blog Talk Radio, or email us is probably the best way. So let us know that you're out there listening and your comments. Visit the Florida States Winery, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. daily, located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. That is exit 285 if you're on Interstate 75. Go 4 miles westbound on State Road 52, and you'll see the signs there. Give them a call direct at 813-996-2113. 813-996-2113. I have about 20 seconds. Or email corp@floon.com. corp@floon.com. Oh, 10 seconds. All right. Man, it's just creeping up there. All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And
thank you all for listening.
We'll see y'all. Thank you.